We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order.
It appears as though something has happened in the motorcade route.
Lee Oswald has been shot.
Paddock fired out of two adjoining rooms using a device similar to a hammer to smash the windows.
Several flying saucers there of extraterrestrial origin.
Digging Chris Graves.
Hi, welcome to another Digging Chris Graves. And I'd like to introduce someone that many of you probably already know, but for those that don't, this is Angry Tiger. He's a really, really cool guy, and he's helped me out, and it's an honor to have you on the show. Welcome.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, man. It's an honor to be on with you, brother. Really, it is. I didn't think a couple months ago that I'd be sitting here talking to the legendary mastodon of researching, Chris Graves, you know, and he'd have me on his show. So the honor is all mine, brother.
All right. I appreciate that. I don't know. It's nice to hear those things, but sometimes I got to be like, is he talking about me? Like, you know, like, who's he talking about? Like, the, you know, invasion of the body snatchers, like someone. Anyway, no, I appreciate that. Thank you, sir. No, right off the bat, I just wanted to know, what would you say the first, I want to say conspiracy, but one of the first things in your life that made you kind of go step back and go, is that exactly, is this event or this thing, is it exactly how it appears? Like, what was the first time your red flag would go up, let's say?
That's kind of a complicated question, you know. I guess I with a complicated answer, the question maybe is not so complicated. Event-wise, Apex event that said, wow, you know, what's going on here? I really don't have one. What happened to me is I got touched by the federal government. So Oklahoma happened, right? And I happened to be, you know, on some mailing lists of the Michigan militia. And just that, you know, that was no big deal. There's a lot of guys in the Michigan militia, and they were unmolested, you know, and I was nothing. I was no big deal or anything. It happened. And
those are right too, by the way, not to cut you off. That's our right to gather a militia, basically, you know.
Yeah, and at that time they were really popular. If you remember, they were gaining you know, huge popularity before the Oklahoma bombing. So I was, you know, I was interested in it. You know what you know, from the age of about 16, I got on their mailing list, right? Then went to a couple of meetings when I was a young guy. Learned how to, like, you know, slice a pie and, you know, run a pattern and do basic recon. And so it was cool. You know, you had these Vietnam vets teaching you
survival.
Yeah. And they were cool. And they taught me about the Constitution. I didn't know any of that crap. I was a knucklehead, you know, I was on drugs. I was not living my best life, you know, from an early age in my teens. So
you were young. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I was on their mailing list and I had not had any contact with them for years. And again, not living my best life. I had this chick with me and she ended up cheating on me with a guy who's friends with some ATF guy or something like that. And she said, yeah, he's got all these military manuals. I know he's, you know, I think he's part of the Michigan militia. I was watching him make bombs. I think I was making firecrackers for the 4th of July or something.
She equated that to, yeah, he's going to bomb the next federal thing.
So she called me the night before. They came and raided my house and she called me the night before. And I'm like, ah, they're not going to. They're not coming over what you said. You know, you're just some, you know, we're burnouts. We're druggies. I'm like, they're not going to take you seriously.
Meanwhile, they want any kind of justification to do just that.
Well, yeah, apparently I was a pretty jaded individual even at that point. And even though I was listening to, you know, punk rock and heavy metal and speed metal, and you thought that was entertainment, you know. Now you get older and you say, hey, a lot of that stuff those guys were talking about was spot on, you know. So anyway, they got me. They came, you know, I did 5 years. I met Denny McClain, famous, you know, baseball pitcher from the Tigers, embezzler and drug trafficker and all that jazz. And I got out and I still was I, and when I was in there, you know, I ran across a magazine called Media Bypass. I don't know if you ever heard of that.
Absolutely. Yep.
And I was reading that, and the guy I was bunked up with, he was a lawyer. So when I was in prison, that kind of like opened my brain, right? I read I, Claudius. I started reading all these old books on Roman history and ancient history. And my dad kind of was like real proud of Roman history. So I already knew some. So I got into that stuff. And so I
did you come across Behold the Pale Horse, by the way, because yeah. I heard that that was like a very popular in the prison system.
Yeah, I did. As a matter of fact, you wow. got to check that out. It's I won't, that's a spoiler alert book. You got to read it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you gotta read it. anyways, yeah, it is popular in the prison system, but I met a lot of guys. I met a lot of lawyers from the Genovese crime family, stuff like that, you know?
Wow.
And so I was trying to get myself out of prison. So that familiarized myself with the law library, legalese. So I was, you know, I didn't waste my time there. I lifted weights and I read. And that's what I did, you know, and I worked in the welding shop. That's those are the things that
so
I did.
So you used a really shit situation to better yourself. And that's I like that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I made a couple appeals on my case, but that's when I learned about like the conspiracy law. Like me and you could have somebody sent to prison just because we testify in front of a grand jury. They did something, right. You know, and it's
on a smaller level, I was a victim of that. I had my freedom taken away for like a week because someone made up stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. See, yeah. And that's not right at all, you know? And then I looked at the 98% conviction rate and, you know, I wasn't a rocket scientist back then by any means, you know, but I knew something was not right. That 98% of the people were not guilty. And I seen the nonsense. He had fishermen in there, dude, who caught a ton too many eel from Watertown, New York. And, right. you know, the guy up north growing weed, you know, who's not bothering anybody, all the right. basic stuff, but there was some criminals there too. But I mean, a lot of
people, non-violent offenders, right?
You're wasting 60, 70 grand a year on having these people in here. Why? And you're taking them away from their family and their livelihood and all that other stuff. So
then you find out just things like the prison industrial complex where they actually
the BOP. Yeah, I worked for the BOP. I'm making like high-end stuff for, you know, other prisons. I'm welding stuff together for other, you know, major corporations. Right. They're making stop signs and stuff nationwide for people. I mean,
it's like slave labor in a way.
Huge racket. Yeah, I made 25 cents an hour and I worked underneath a pipe fitter. Wow. Right. But he was cool. You know, the pipe fitter was a militia guy from Pennsylvania. Wow. So, you know, he took certain people under his wing. So I made the best of it, but so that I was already knew something was wrong, right?
Right.
And then I guess, you know, fast forward to Ron Paul, 2008. Yeah. I got involved in the campaign. He said something that made me think. He explained the Federal Reserve. I seen him somewhere, yeah. dude, and he was explaining how the Federal Reserve worked. And I'm like, what's this little old man saying? You know, I had given up on politics. I'm like, forget the system, right?
Right.
You know, I'm working for somebody.
He was one of the only one talking about that, by the way, back in the 90s.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, and I'm an auto body man by trade. So I always had a job, you know, at that point I was still working for somebody. And then I got into the Ron Paul movement. I start, you know, worked for the campaign. I was very passionate about it, you know, knocked on doors, was a delegate. And I met this guy that I had to go, you know, canvassing with. And he was a little bit older than me. And he's, you know, we knock on a door and I'm like, hello, ma'am. You know, it's this little old lady. He's like, did you know that the UN is going to take over America in 10 years? And I'm looking at him and I'm like, what, you know, what's he saying? You know, right. And like, he just took over the whole thing. He's telling this lady, you know, about fluoride in the water, all this stuff all at one time. Right?
Scaring her.
Yeah. Stuff I never heard of, dude. GMOs. Yeah. The government, you know, all this whole thing. I'm like, wow. You know, they're trying to kill us and mass murder. And I wasn't there yet. Right. I didn't know. So after we get off the porch, I'm like, look, man, and I still think I was smart in saying this. You yeah. can't do that. I go, whatever you believe, bro, you can't tell people this stuff because you just freaked that old lady out, dude. She probably thinks we're terrorists. You know? Yeah,
right. I'm guilty of that myself. I try to rein it
me
in.
Too. Like,
yeah.
So I'm like, where did you hear all that stuff, by the way? He's like, you don't know? I'm like, no. He's like, Alex Jones.
Oh, dude. Yeah.
I'm like, okay. So Ron Paul campaign happens and ends, and there's like this void, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, looking for, you know, some kind of something intellectually to fill a political void. Right. And so I check out InfoWars. I check out Alex Jones, and I'm listening to this guy, and I'm like, what is he talking about? GMO food soft kill. What is that? You know, what's cancer rates, you know, or IQs being, you know, 15% lower in fluorinated areas. What's he talking about? You know, fluoride's good for your teeth. This guy's a clown.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So me being me, I started researching the stuff the guy was saying and finding out, yeah, this is true.
He's spot on. He just went about it the wrong way.
And that was the event, dude. That was the apex event. When it was the poisoning of the population with the food, the injections, or however, I'm sure you've heard that phrase before. The food was poisoned. The water was poisoned. The medicine was poisoned. And I already knew the culture was being poisoned, you know? So that was the apex moment. It was just a light went on, and I'm like, oh my God, you know, everything that I've been brought up in has been a lie, and I've been busting my butt trying to stay in the system and do the right thing, especially after prison. Hard to get a job in certain dealerships, you know, they wouldn't hire you because you're a felon and all this other stuff. And I'm working in this crap-ass junkyard, right? You know, finagling cars for the $60 million man here, which he was a good guy. Good guy that I worked for, actually. But, you know, and it's all a lie. And, dude, the liberation that I had at that moment. At first, there's the anger.
There's fear, and then eventually a calming, kind of.
I'm like, what am I doing this for? I'm like, if this all collapses, I know how to hunt. I know how to fish. I love doing those things. I'll go live in the woods. Yeah. You know, if everything's, you know, if I lose everything, who cares? And, dude, that changed my life. Because now the life that I live is not so much wrapped around monetary things or getting things that are flashy or anything like that. Dude, I'm a very simple guy. Everything I love is free. And if all this wouldn't have happened to me, I wouldn't know that. You know, see, I've lost peace, you know.
Well, it is. And you're onto something there because, I've lost a majority of my belongings a couple times now. And I'm almost 40 years old. And to be honest with you, in a weird way, not to make myself feel better, because I actually do feel this way. It's like a weight lifted off your shoulders. You know, when people, they pass away and then their family has to literally get rid of all of their belongings, all this stuff. It's just like we accumulate all this stuff. And for what? I mean, besides the basics, it's like we're kind of programmed that way through our whole lives. You know, we need to collect things, you know, we need to, you know, material stuff. But you're right. If there is a freedom in that, you know.
Yeah, there is. And then I went through the phase of wanting to tell everybody, right? You know, so I think all of us involved in the truther or conspiracy theory, you know, lifestyle, because it's a lifestyle. I know that you live the way you believe. I live the way I believe. I'll avoid GMO at all costs. I try not to drink fluoride no matter what. And if I do, you know, I'm taking iodine, you know. I studied this stuff. I studied nutrition. You know, I was a certified personal trainer, all that stuff, you know. So I know about nutrition. I study nutraceuticals. It opened all that up to me, man. Wow. You know, so a lot of people are like, how do you live knowing all that? You know, when I talk to my normal friends, right? Man, how do you walk around with that in your brain, dude? I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, I'm fighting back. I don't buy stuff from Walmart. I don't buy stuff off of Amazon if I can't absolutely help it, you know?
They make it very hard. Yeah.
I go to sleep well at night. I don't lie, cheat, or steal. You know, I didn't have any of these values. I did. My parents instilled the values, but this brought them to the surface, you know?
Yeah. They were always there, but when you were a kid, you just want to have fun and things like that.
The machine ate me up and spit me out, dude. I was a product. I was a druggie, dude. I was addicted to crack cocaine. I was addicted to pills, dude. I've had a rough life when it comes to drugs. You know what I'm saying? You know, always had my job, always took care of my kid, raised my kid by myself. You know, it was, you know, everything I've done myself, right? You know, and then when I was working for somebody, that's another thing this allowed me to do was it blossomed me, and I was confident enough to do my own businesses. You know, I got cannabis, you know, happened in Michigan. I got into that. Then I got into environmental controls and lighting cannabis. Fireworks is one of my huge interests. I got into that. I mean, I've done wholesale, retail, public display, all that in a span of like 5 years, you know, importing, you know, exporting. So with all that, this environment of intelligentsia, of wanting to know more, of looking for the truth and being truthful with myself, learning how to do that, I have this whole movement to thank for that, you know? So that's the main thing I want to point out to people. We're alone. Yeah. And you get ostracized, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
We're ostracized, dude. We're so alone. We're a small percentage of the population. Our people put up with us and they love us. You know, we love them and we love the world, or we wouldn't be upset about this stuff. That's another thing. Everyone I meet, like you, you love people, bro. You love the world, dude. That's why you're interested.
Don't tell too many people that, because I like to give off the perception that, you know, I don't like anybody. But, yeah, I think you might be like George Carlin. You scratch a cynic and you get an optimist or whatever he said. But, yeah. I've been hurt too many times. Right. Tiger, you know, no, but you're right. If I didn't care, I would just do my own thing, you know, which I'd like to do, you know, like I was telling you before, being creative. But this has taken up some space in my life. And I feel like, in a good way, you know, a public service of sorts, not to pat myself on the back, but I try to shine a light where a light needs to be, you know, shown or shined or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Bro. And you've already done this. I know you've done this because you reached me before. If you reach one person, dude.
Yeah.
If we reach one person doing this, dude, that's a phenomenal thing.
A purpose. Yeah.
Yeah.
One and person. It only has to be one.
Yeah. That's it.
Like, it could be more, but yeah, but just
if one. You made one person, if this podcast that we're doing this evening made one person kind of like feel like he is a kindred soul and not lonely, we did a great thing, bro.
And you sharing the thing, you made the best out of one of the worst situations, you know, incarcerated and everything. You were able to, you know, I don't want to say the whole bootstraps thing, but basically, yeah, by working for yourself, yeah. You were able to kind of control your own destiny as much as, you know, our society will allow, but good for you. And I didn't know a lot of that. And I'm glad I do now.
Well, thanks, man. Well, thanks. Yeah. Oh, I appreciate it.
Before, when I was asking about like a moment, like, were you ever curious, like as a kid, like the whole, for me, it was UFOs all the way. And I'm not saying that they're alien. I'm not saying they're not. I think it's a little bit, it could be a little bit of both. I think a lot of it's classified technology. That's just me researching over the years. Have you had something like, even if it was like something as benign as like Bigfoot or?
Oh yeah, no, dude. UFOs was a big thing I was always into. I was always wondering, you know, where are there UFOs? You know, the occult really kind of sucked me in, because when I was growing up, we were the long hair. It was during the heavy metal era. Do you know what I'm saying?
Satanic panic. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. The satanic panic. So we'd be out in the woods and we'd go out places, like, as teenagers, dude, there'd be pentagrams, there'd be altars, there'd be, you'd find all kinds of weird upside down crosses people built. You know, it was really weird. So
they told kids not to go in the woods. I remember that as a kid.
That fascinated me. So then the subliminal message thing fascinated me too.
Ooh.
Yeah. That really, you know, and that was all crap by the people at the PMRC. That was all garbage.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, Tipper Gore, Al Gore's wife. And
right. You know, they're playing shit backwards and it sounds like pig Latin. And they're like, oh, look, it's saying to kill yourself.
My other show, Get Mad with Chris Graves. Actually, here's a little thing that no one really knows except for me and one other person. My intro has some of that backwards masking in it.
Really?
Well, I'll just put it out there. And and it's a funny story that I'll tell one day. But I utilized that. And the person that made it for me utilized that too. But for those that might not be as familiar as we are with the heavy metal and Tipper Gore and basically the beginning of this, I even had the explicit content.
Parental
advisory. I wanted that as a band, actually. I almost did that, or an album or whatever. But for those that might not know, Dee Snider did a beautiful thing.
Yes.
You just explained to people. I don't know if you agree with me, but like, he basically blew them away because they were expecting a different reaction from Dee Snider of Twisted Sister fame.
He looked like a wild man, and that's what they expected. They expected some dumb burnout to get up there and start sounding like an idiot. Went up there with his 130 IQ and showed them what for, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know,
it was beautiful. He had all the legal speak. He had everything down, the talking points. And if you saw the reaction of the politicians, they were not expecting that whatsoever. And it was beautiful.
No, yeah. And but to admittingly, so it was extremely strange times.
Yes,
you know, back then there was weird stuff going on, man. There was a lot of
Iran-Contra, the Reagan administration.
Yeah, there's a lot of cult activity going on. There was a lot going on in the administration, like you said, you know. But yeah, that was something that I was interested in too. That was that, you know, okay, unexplained stuff. You know, was always the Bermuda Triangle was another thing I delved into a little bit. You know.
I live in I actually reside right now in an area that is described as a Bermuda Triangle on land called the Bridgewater Triangle.
Okay.
And I'm doing something with that currently, like a screenplay type thing that from years ago, but it had a lot of the things that, you know, the Bermuda Triangle would have, like a UFO sightings. They have satanic murders in the woods of Freetown State Forest, right next to Fall River where Lizzie Borden was, all that stuff.
Yep.
I'm around that whole area. We have ghost King Philip's War. You ever heard of that?
Yes, I have. Yep.
King Philip was the name of my high school growing up in Wrentham, Massachusetts, right? Unfortunately, it's the same school that they made a movie about because some teenage girl texted her boyfriend and told him to kill himself, and he did. And they made a whole movie about it recently and all that. So that was kind of odd because I thought I was going to be the first famous person that – no, I'm just kidding. But no, but it's just weird because the whole area, they say with the Wampanoag tribe of the Native Americans around here, a lot of them were slaughtered by, you know, the English settlers during King Philip's War. And – there, you know, people think, you know, that the land was cursed because the innocent blood was spilt on both ends, actually.
Right.
The English settlers and King Philip's men. And they think because of that negative energy, all this weird activity has been around, like a Bigfoot type creature has been sighted. Thunderbirds that look like pterodactyls back in the day. A Brockton, Mass cop actually reported that, and he was basically ridiculed for the rest of his career for like 30 years, but he never changed his story. Weird sightings of weird out of place animals, ghosts, disappearing hitchhikers you hear about, like on Route 44 going to Fall River, actually. All this whole area is just really interesting. And even growing up, I didn't really know a lot of this stuff. We had like that satanic panic stuff where teenagers would go and either put pentagrams, you know, spray painting, like tagging was huge back in graffiti and everything. So it's really interesting, just, you know, from that perspective, that I actually grew up in that area with Salem, with the witch stuff.
And, yeah. Wow. There's a lot of activity in that area. We had a place called, it was an old mental institution.
We had a bunch of those. Yeah. And they're always haunted and everything. Yeah.
It was called the Northville Tunnels, we called it. And so it had tunnels underneath it, and it had tunnels from one facility to the other. And then it had a main tunnel that went all the way to this other mental institution called Eloise. And this is where I guess one of the plagues was going on here, and they were transporting people from through those tunnels so they wouldn't get sick. Right. So yeah, we would go into those places, and yeah, dude, we ran across a seance, and you know, these guys had torches. It was at night.
You actually saw that, dude.
We're out there smoking pot with our chicks, right? We're getting high with our girlfriends, smoking weed, and you know, like we're just out
there. A lot of it was rumor. Like a lot of people said, "Oh, I heard my buddy said that he saw you saw one."
Yeah, I absolutely saw one, dude.
Please tell me, like,
so okay, so and here's another thing. We were not normal kids. We knew, and it was known when you went armed. You know, I had a meat cleaver, you know, or whatever. We had homemade blow torches. We had some stuff. We were crazy.
And this is the 1980s. I mean,
you were allowed to do all this. Well, not allowed, but we did all this shit, right? I mean, so, you know,
still played with sticks.
Yeah, no, we had blow torches and all kinds of shit when we'd go into these places, knives, all kinds of stuff.
Right.
So
right.
We go into this place, dude, and we're trying to, smoke a couple joints, go with the girls. We're walking around. It's night. Yeah. And we get down into the main tunnels and I hear something. And my neck, just the hair on my neck stands up. And I look at my buddy, Frankie. I'm like, dude, my other buddy, Frankie. Frankie and some other guy. I'm going to watch names because I don't think I don't want to say anybody's name. But so I'm like, dude, you hear that? He's like, yeah. I was like, you know, told the girls to stay there. So me and Frankie, we're the fastest guys, dude. And we go and we sneak up to see what's going on. And we see, dude, there's probably, I would say 14 or 15 adults with torches, with hoods on, dude, around an altar. Now, we had known about this altar. That's where we were going, right? To scare the girls, right? Where this big satanic thing and all this. And now that
perfect
I look back
on perfect date night.
Yeah. Now that I look back on it, dude, that I know a little bit more about symbology, it wasn't just a pentagram and a bunch of idiots fooling around. It was full on Baphomet, you know, occult symbolism everywhere, right? So
did you notice, was there someone on the altar?
We did not notice that, dude. But the problem was, is once we seen what was going on, you know, we're shitting our pants, dude. We're like, oh my God, you know, holy crap. You know, let's get the hell out of here. Right. So
it's like a scene out of the movie Race with the Devil from the 70s, where they actually are watching from afar, and that the cult members hear them and turn. It's like something out of a nightmare.
Oh, dude, we were terrified. We're totally, dude. I'm like, you know, because we know this is bad news. You know what I'm saying? And we thought we were a little badasses at that time. The only good thing we knew we were good at was getting away from people. Right.
Right.
So we're going back, dude. They had to have heard us, because by the time we got to the girls, they said, I could hear them say, there's someone in the tunnel.
Oh, God.
Dude.
Wow.
Dragging these, you know, 16-year-old girls with us, you know, by the hand, ripping the, you know, I mean, dragging them, bro. Like, I remember literally her feet were tore up from me dragging her out of those tunnels, dude. Running into the, when I, once you got outside, it's a giant facility. It's all overgrown and stuff, dude. We could see them coming with the torches and stuff.
Wow.
So, you know, yeah, dude, we lit the field on fire. Wow. We're in a field. We lit the field on fire, dude. We lit and ran. That's all we could think to do. That's all we could. And we did not look back, dude, all the way to the car. And I'll never forget that night. I mean, it was terrifying.
It's right out of that movie, Race with the Devil, that scared me like as a kid.
I've never seen it.
Bro. 1975. Literally 1975. Peter Fonda and Warren Oates. They have their girlfriends in an RV in the middle of the desert in like on the West Coast.
Okay.
They're traveling cross country or they're whatever. They're going, making their way to California from like Arizona or something. And what ends up happening, I'm not spoiling anything here, but that's what the movie's about. They park for the night in just some random place in the desert. And Warren and Peter, they end up going to relieve themselves, you know, away from the girls. They have a little campfire going. So they're walking through the wooded area for a little while. And then they notice they hear like some kind of chanting in the far off distance. So they go, they're kind of nosy. They go and, you know, they come across a satanic ritual, and where there's like supposedly a virgin girl is tied up, there's bonfires, all the same thing you described, only not in a tunnel thing. I mean, the tunnel thing is even scarier because it's like confined and everything. But in the movie, they end up being like, oh my God, what's happening here? They step on like a branch, and that's when all the cult members turn and look at them. And the rest of the movie is them race of the Devil through on in that RV. Through the states. And what the scariest part about the whole thing, besides that scene where they get out of a nightmare, where the monster sees you and you're like, oh my God, that
alert. Yeah.
That's what reminded me of when you were talking about, oh, there's someone in the tunnel. I'm telling you, man, throughout the rest of the movie, you find out that like most of like the town officials and like the state troopers, they're all in on like this cult activity. So it's like, and I hate to say it, but just with the work of like Dave McGowan with his book, Programmed to Kill, he makes a lot of connections with like the Satanism from the 80s, all that stuff. Unfortunately, with the pedophilia thing, you know, and world leaders, elites, Pizzagate before Pizzagate, with like the McMartin preschool thing with the tunnels underneath that.
Right.
Didn't exist, but then they found out later on they very well could have, like when they hired the parents of these kids, hired like a, if you, not an archaeologist, but I can't remember the term, but he had the sonar type equipment where he actually did see there was remnants of tunnels. The kids weren't making up this stuff.
Right.
So there's something to it. So when you said, when you were dragging the girl out of there, you really look back and think like the cops could have been in on it. All this stuff, you know what I mean? Like it wasn't a bunch of teenagers like yourselves.
No, dude, that's why we were so worried. I'm scared. I'm like, I knew they were adults, dude. I'm like, yes. these are men and women, you know. Yeah. That's
why a lot of this got covered up, because you have to have like law enforcement in on something like this, you know.
Well, and this is the thing, you know, that I'm going to say this. If you look at what you just said, you said the law enforcement, you said
if it just goes away,
Pizzagate thing, you said the Satanism, all that, you know, the elites. People don't like to talk about that, you know, because they think that it's out of this world, or it's too bombastic. I don't care what anybody says. I think you're being a little bit foolishly optimistic, to be mild. Yeah. If you can look at all this stuff and say that there's not some kind of evil, even if it's compartmentalized or separate ones, but some kind of evil behind it, like a force. This isn't just like a human beings, you know, people like, why would someone do that? They must be crazy. No, there's something else going on there other than craziness. I mean, look at what in our world now, mutilating children is a normal subject, and it's being debated. Do you hear what I'm saying? I mean, it's being debated. It's accepted and been passed into law now.
And when we were growing up, that would never have.
No, anything. No, never. No. If you study, I've studied the occult. I mean, I'm a Catholic. It's very hard to be a Catholic. There are many rules, right? And I try to follow almost all the rules. So it's hard to be a Catholic in that aspect. And it's hard to be a Catholic because you have the Vatican, the Catholic Church. That's not what that is to me. I was raised Catholic. That's the relationship I have with Jesus Christ. That's how I was taught. And my mother told me the church is in your heart, right? Yeah. So I found a nice old fashioned Catholic church I go to. They don't follow any of this woke crap. And that's all I'm going to say about that. I'm not going to apologize for my religion. You know, I don't support the Vatican, the Pope, molesting children, any of that.
Oh,
and all the Catholics I know don't support any of that stuff. So it's not like we're, you know, supportive of that stuff. So with that being said, I still, it's heresy for me to study the occult. I studied the occult. I studied the Druids. I studied all the Celtic religions. I studied the Eastern philosophies, the Kabbalah. I studied all of that stuff. I mean, in depth, dude. Like, I was off, not a Christian for a very long time. A very long time.
And you were just obtaining knowledge.
Yeah, exactly.
Having an informed opinion, like we're having right now.
The Crowley stuff, all of it.
Yeah.
And there is something to all of that stuff. People believe in this stuff. And these elites believe in something, I think, that I don't even think we're 100% hip to it, bro.
No, I know. Yeah.
What do you think?
I think you're
right. I don't mean to ask you a question.
No, I know. I appreciate that. No, I probably have not looked into it as much as what you had just said, just because after a certain point, I was raised Catholic. I don't really tell anybody that. It's not a secret or anything, but I went to CCD every Sunday. I got confirmed, all that stuff. And then I had a moment in high school after that where I, you know, started just thinking. And this is before like 9/11, right? Before even Columbine and stuff. I started thinking, like, is there a life after death? Is there like a grand creator, all this horrible stuff going on in the world? Like how could there be an all loving God? Or then you hear that, this God that you have to fear, all this stuff. So I looked into it a little bit because I was curious, you know, and that is one of the big questions. Are we alone in the universe? Is there life after death? Why are we here? Like the three big, you know, basic, the whys, the important ones in my opinion. But I, at this point, I don't really affiliate with any religion that a man made, you know, because a lot of it, you know, what we were saying, in my mind, a lot of it's, you know, a man-made construct when it comes to, like you said, the Vatican and things like that, because they have all this gold and stuff, but they're preaching the word of Jesus Christ about, you know, feeding the poor and stuff, but they're sitting on a whole thing. And then all the religions, they're all equal opportunity. And, you know, if it'll give peace to individuals to, you know, let them go on with their day. And like, cause I've needed that kind of peace myself a lot over the years, even more so now. And if I'm not going to deny anybody, you know, whatever they may think happens to us when we die or why we're here or whoever or whatever may have or may not have created us. So I'm an open book, open mind. I'm not saying people that are religious or not. I'm just saying I find I try to find peace and just purpose and all kinds of things like creativity, you know, relationships, you know, things like that. Music is a huge one, but with the religion thing, I just over the years, just with all most wars, it's a scapegoat usually, you know, religion, and like you don't believe in the same thing I do, so I want to kill you. It's like
the antithesis of religion.
People are human beings. I don't know if it's just a part of who we are that we want to destroy each other, and the religion is a good scapegoat. I don't know. And to be honest with you, quite frankly, I don't even, I'm apathetic about it. I'll find out or not find out the moment I die. You know what I mean? It'll either be fade to black or it'll be what everyone was talking about, or maybe none of the above.
Right.
I went on this whole rant, but no, I think these elites, whoever they are, and we'll never know their actual names, because if you know their names, like a Rockefeller or a Rothschild, chances are they're not the ones actually running the show. And we'll never know who actually is behind everything. And there's a reason for that. But I think, like you said, these people, and with all the atrocities, I hate to say, put in the same category as you or I, but I think they believe what you're talking about. Like, even if there's nothing to it, and it's just a whole bunch of black magic, it's just nothing, it's just a thing, I think they believe it. Or sometimes they want to make self-fulfilling prophecies, you know, things like that. They make these things happen sometimes.
Yeah, right? you know what? I'll probably be kicked out of the Christian club after this thing, but
you're speaking your mind in your
own. You know, the way I was brought up in Christianity was that, you know, I went to Catholic school and everything, and you know, you never judge other people by their religion. Never. I was taught that was hammered into me. I know it's in the Bible. I don't think a Buddhist is going to hell because he doesn't say the words Jesus Christ. That's the, if we all act like Christians, and if you study all the religions that are halfway decent, you know, that aren't sacrificing children and all that stuff, the rules are all the same. Isn't that kind of uncanny?
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's why I don't like to bring up the fact, like a lot of, in the past when I was a little more militant about religion and saying, oh, it started the cause of all the wars and everything. I backed off that shit a while ago.
Well, no, because men are valuable. It's the men. Yeah. They take this stuff just like it gets centralized, right? House churches are the way to go. Independent religion is more of the way to go. Yeah. Right. And that's actually because men, when you centralize things in history, they destroy it.
It turns
into something happens, evil gets a hold of it. And, you know, I can't ignore, though, just from a philosophical standpoint.
Like a Horus, Jesus thing. To me, it's the same story, but maybe that's
it's unfortunately, it's historically factual what you're saying. In Catholicism.
It comes across
we're eating the blood and drinking the blood and eating the flesh of our Savior. How much more ritualistic do you want to get?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, Catholics off when I tell them that.
That's what I'm saying. And it's hard for me to, because sometimes people will misconstrue that as I'm attacking them when I point out that it's basically with the virgin birth. Like, I think Horus had kind of a crucifixion. It's been a long time, but water into wine, walking
many
on water.
Many similarities, factual, historical similarities.
But that's like every religion, maybe not Buddhism, but even Buddhism too, in Scientology.
Hinduism, Buddhism, Kabbalism.
You have the Prophet Muhammad, you have Jesus Christ, you have a lot of the same characters, a lot of the same lessons or stories or lessons learned and thing. And everyone is fighting with each other when you're believing the same stuff a lot of the time, you know?
Right. And the reason I like Catholicism, it's older, and Christianity historically, at least in the Western part of the world, has brought civilization.
Yeah.
So I back that. Historically, the facts back Christianity.
Is there a pagan origin to now? This might get me sent to hell if there is a hell. Is there a pagan origin to Christianity? Because I've read different things over the years where
the paganism that I see involved is it seems like in Europe what they did was they went to with the pagans. There's a lot of history in all this, even the Nicene Council. people don't want to admit it, but all this was baked into the Nicene Council and some other councils, at the Council of Trent and some other stuff. But they basically took the holidays of the pagans and incorporated them into Christianity. And that to deny that as a Christian is being ignorant.
All Hallows Eve, Halloween.
Yeah, that's All Saints Day. Yeah, all that. It's at Samhain. That's the festival of Samhain, the Celtic festival of Samhain. Yeah. I believe Samhain celebrate Saronus, the wood god, and that is
Ireland. Yeah.
Yep, that is the time of the year that the even veil between the two worlds is the thinnest, so you can actually talk to the dead and stuff. Supposedly,
I've heard that, and this is really full disclosure. I'm not trying to attack anyone. I've heard that even Christmas itself, as a holiday, has pagan roots. And
winter solstice. Okay, so it's, you know, basically right around the winter solstice. Okay, I mean, scientifically, historically, factually, Jesus wasn't really born around that area.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, and then they took Odin's tree, right? And that's, you know, there's a really cool story behind that. That's supposed to be historical and factual. But and that's the thing. You're right. There's a lot of paganism in Christianity. And when Christians don't admit that, it bothers me because it's a fact. I mean, I don't try to change the facts because it doesn't go with what you want it to go with or what you've been told.
Your narrative or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If I'm a Detroit Lions fan and they cheat,
right,
I'm not going to support them. I shouldn't. Well, you should. That's your team.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like the America.
It's your tribe. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we hate America. Do you ever hear that? Oh, you just hate America. Because, you know, you talk about the military industrial complex.
Yeah, I talk about 9/11 valid questions that haven't been answered. And they go, well, get out of the – you should be hung for treason. I'm like, what about the people that actually done it? Shouldn't they – or even like Fauci. People like Fauci. Like, well, you want me to hang because I'm asking a question?
Like, yeah, what are you guys talking about?
Yeah, wanting the truth was weaponized, a truther, you know. But anyway, it's fascinating because I don't – like I said – when it comes to research, I'll be honest, like a lot of the religious stuff, I just didn't have, like, kind of like with the secret societies too, like with Bill Cooper, we're talking about, I just don't have an interest. I mean, it can be interesting, but after a certain point, I'm like, they lose me with the numerology and thing. And there might be something to that too, but.
Dude, I get voracious on whatever I'm researching for it. Sometimes it's years at a time. Sometimes it's days. Right. But my problem is there's so much in there. I have to dig around for it. But once I get to a certain point where it starts getting way down the rabbit hole where, okay, I don't need to know all this. I like to get the roundabouts, the meat and potatoes,
the bullet points.
So I understand what's going on, you know, and that's how I do my research. But dude, there's so much out there. How could you know, the stuff you research, you know, a lot of it crosses lines with psychology too, right? Doesn't it? I mean, don't you got to,
well, a lot of as an example, a lot of the school shootings have the same hallmarks all the time. Like, usually you never find out who the suspect's psychiatrist was and what he was prescribing him, things like that. And then they also showed that a lot of the American Medical Association, a lot of these syndromes and things aren't actual syndromes. I came to find out, like, a lot of psychiatry tied into like eugenics and things like back in the day, or like MK Ultra stuff, which, you know, that sounds like it's science fiction, but it's actually a fact. I mean, they tried to destroy most of the files back in the 70s, but they were able, the church committee was able to unearth a lot of that, enough to show you it was a real thing. And a lot of that had to do with psychiatry, like programming the brain, you know, to do things it wouldn't ordinarily do. And you have like the famous case. I'm actually still trying to figure out what angle Tucker had, but Tucker Carlson, you know, basically outed the CIA a couple of weeks ago in the murder of John F. Kennedy, which a lot of us researchers already kind of knew or felt, you know. But for him, he brought up Dr. West in that whole thing. And that was like, whoa, like, not only is he indicting the CIA, who probably gave him the talking points for that report. That's why I'm trying to figure out what the angle was. It's kind of like with the Pentagon and the UFO stuff during the lockdown. all of a sudden now, if you see a UFO, you're not a crazy kook. But for years, they would always, you know, tell people to, you know, call them nuts and have them ostracized. Now, all of a sudden, it's normal during this lockdown. So what, to make us not pay attention to that? I don't know. I'm not paranoid, but I'm saying there's got to be some kind of angle. But he brought up Dr. West, and that is really down the rabbit hole for John Q. Public.
Yes, it is.
He was Jack Ruby. Maybe he wasn't his actual psychiatrist, but he went to visit Jack Ruby when Jack Ruby was on waiting on trial and in jail, in prison, waiting for his trial to start. He actually visited him. Why is he visiting the Lee Harvey Oswald's killer, like in the jail? And, you know, and then you come to find out that he was the CIA's like top MK Ultra psychiatrist. And he's also connected to McVeigh, Timothy McVeigh of Oklahoma City. He's connected to Sirhan, Bobby Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy's supposed assassin. I actually think it was Eugene Caesar, the security guard that worked for Lockheed Martin that was behind Bobby. That's a different story. I'm going way down the rabbit hole. I'm doing what that guy did to that woman in front of you, scaring everybody. Like that. But what I'm saying is, for the fact that Dr. West was brought up on Tucker Carlson, like, I don't know, that's a real rabbit hole thing that I never
Let me ask you a question, if you don't mind, dude. So guys like you and Don.
Yeah.
Okay, because I know that as soon as West's name came out of Tucker's mouth and Don knew about it, his ears might have had to have popped up, right?
Yeah.
So what does that mean to you guys to hear that? I mean, like you said, does it creep you out?
There's an angle that I'm not seeing or not considering right now, because Jason Barker, your co-host and producer of the night,
Jason Barker.
We did a digging Chris Graves the previous episode. We went into Operation Northwoods and all that.
I've seen it. That was excellent, dude.
Thank you. That was all Jason. Seriously, like I wanted to do that as a show for a long time. And just having him on board gave me a kind of a credibility that I wouldn't have had if it was just myself.
Nice.
But I'm bringing that up because we're going to do our next episode on Operation Mockingbird, which is the CIA's infiltration of the media and to sway public opinion. And that plays a big part, and especially with the wars that we keep finding ourselves in, and, you know, trust the science, all these buzzwords that, you know, get people going, you know, insurrection, you know, all these things are done. So when you ask me about that Mockingbird is still alive and well. And even in the alt media, people, other conspiracy minded people might not even consider that, you know, that doesn't just go with the mainstream media. Over the years, it's been outed that there's been a lot of different, disinfo type people. You know, I'm not saying everyone is, but because you can't really prove it. Until you can out them with evidence. But a lot of the time, these people, they do questionable things and make you go, well, why is he saying this or acting that way? And like, was he influenced somehow? And with Tucker, I think his father is actually a CIA agent or some kind of a CIA affiliation.
He was involved with Radio Free America or something like that. One of those things back in the day.
Yeah.
That's like basically a propaganda channel, right?
Yes, basically. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not saying he got it from his father, but anytime you have anyone that has a platform that's huge, like in the media, you got to just have in the back of your mind not to be paranoid and not to think that, be skeptical of every single thing. But for the most part, think for yourself. Does it make sense? I mean, they would never allow that report to be on something like a Tucker Carlson years ago, let alone having the MK Ultra's like top psychiatrist be outed.
Yeah, that guy, his fingerprints are all over all kinds of stuff. When I was going through Don's book,
Hidden History.
Yeah, Hidden History, dude. That guy's everywhere.
Gabe McGowan wrote all about him too. Like,
yep.
he was huge with the program To Kill.
Yeah. How come nobody ever points this out? Hey, guy. Hey, I'm not no expert, but, you know, FBI or CIA or whoever, you know, there's this guy over here, the psychiatrist. He's involved in all this stuff. You might want to look at that.
Why is he
I'm just the auto body guy. So
right. You're just a layman, you know, John Q. Public. But it's like, yeah, it's a valid question. Why is he affiliated with Sirhan, Jack Ruby, Timothy McVeigh? I'm leaving out a few. I don't want to say a couple more because I can't. Right now it's not in front of me, but he has a whole laundry list of like people that had questionable motives in the crimes that they were accused of, you know. So I don't know what to make of it. It's one of those things. There's an angle there that I'm not seeing yet with Tucker. Right. I don't know, because I don't know why they would want to normalize that, like the UFO thing. Like, I could see that maybe being a distraction for a little bit from the race riots, which were a distraction from us being locked down, which was a distraction from whatever. Let me ask you a question.
Do you think Tucker could possibly have gone rogue? Because he's been dropping truth buzzwords, dude, for about 5 years now.
Well, he did it with Vegas, I noticed. The Vegas shooting, he brought up the other suspect that was going to be arraigned, and then it disappeared.
He's usually 3 to 4 months late, but he whitewashes a lot of Alex Jones stuff, too. He regurgitates stuff. You'll hear on Alex Jones, like, I haven't listened to Alex in a long time, but you'd hear on Alex, and then a month and a half to 4 months later, depending, Tucker would be reporting on it in a whitewashed kind of way.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't know.
I'm not going to say what I think Alex is, but I don't trust Alex Jones. I think he can be entertaining, but
something happened to Alex Jones, dude. I don't know when, and I don't know where.
Well, I'll just say people can look on YouTube. It should still be there. Bill Cooper goes over Alex Jones's Y2K special, where he's basically saying that the world's coming to an end in real time.
Yeah,
he critiques the whole thing about how he's trying to spread fear. Where there's no baseless, there's nothing going on Y2K. And then even Joe Rogan or Eddie Bravo, when he was on Joe Rogan with Alex, asked Alex, what was the deal with that Y2K thing? And Alex gave the same like lame excuse that he did during the Sandy Hook deposition. He said he was going through a psychosis at the time or whatever.
Did Alex push Planet X too?
Until recently with the interdimensional, like,
Do you remember Planet X?
The Anunnaki. I know all about this. Yeah, I went down that rabbit hole, like, when it came to aliens and things like that. I don't know what to make of that. They wanted the gold. They wanted gold for their ozone layer, and that's why gold is worth so much. There's a whole thing behind it. But Alex, for the most part, would stay away from the cosmic, type conspiracies. He was really grounded for a while, and he had a lot of good information. And I think that there was a reason for that, because even Alex would boast about how he had CIA people in his family. People don't point that out. You know what I mean?
So he made us all crazy, dude.
I think he was given street credit in the conspiracy circles, starting really with the Bohemian Grove, with him sneaking in. He would have been murdered on site if they didn't want that video being filmed.
You're not sneaking into Bohemian Grove.
But. No. I think he was allowed access to get that street cred. So people that I know in my life to this day, I won't name them, but a couple of them too. They still give Alex a lot of credit for waking up the masses, waking up this. I think it was really kind of like how the Sandy Hook trials, I feel like, were engineered to make it so that we're too scared to ask questions because we might have to pay $2.3 trillion. Just like with January 6th, it was to scare people from having the right to protest. You know, I feel like these things are kind of engineered in a way, years in advance. So when I say that, maybe Jason's right when it comes to speculation here. Maybe I shouldn't be speculating, but I've been studying Alex and watching him since the late 1990s. So I think, he was given access for certain times that would get him like street cred, for lack of a better term, like with people like us, you know, that are questioning things to a point where he basically took Bill Cooper's whole persona, and Bill Cooper got his ass shot to death in 2001. Bill Cooper predicted 9/11, right?
Yes,
in
I know.
June of 2001, because he saw the trends. He saw they were pushing Osama in the news all of a sudden, and he basically predicted it. But Alex gets the credit for predicting 9/11 because he did what you just said, how Tucker whitewashes like Alex's stuff a month later. There's a famous footage of Alex predicting 9/11, but it was a full month after Bill did. So he right. basically, and he was admittedly a huge fan of the hour of the time, Bill's radio
show. He does what other podcasters do with him.
Yes.
He did that with Bill Cooper. You know, my take on Alex, dude, is he did wake people up, I guess, but not.
But he
woke you up into a nightmare.
Yeah.
He woke you up. And you woke up and you started hating everything and everybody. But look at these morons. They don't know like I know the GMO and the fluoride.
Did they want him, a person like him, to do that for a reason? Because with 9/11,
yes.
With 9/11, his 9/11 documentaries, he was given access that other people weren't. And that's what he started building, becoming famous, more and more famous.
Yeah, but dude, he marginalized the whole movement. That's my point. First of all, he poisoned the well with us. Okay, it made it so we couldn't disseminate information correctly because of the way that he presented it to us. You got to remember, a lot of the listeners, dude, they're not like Chris Graves or, you know, I'm not trying to Angry Tiger or Jason Barker where they'll go disseminate stuff and try to, you know, they're not thinking about that stuff. Alex Jones is winding you up, dude, basically then you're buying his products, right? Then he's grifting you for his products. You're insulated and you listen to InfoWars every single day. You know, you got that rage going on that he's feeding you. It's rage porn, you know, and you're not disseminating information to anybody in a proper way. And he marginalized everything. They listen to Alex Jones. He believes in the lizard people. He's crazy, you know? So anything to do with the truther movement, dude, starting with that 9/11, that's the first thing I thought is like, he's making it so no one will ever look at this because this crazy guy is the one looking into it. And everybody thinks he's nuts already.
Look at 2015. You might really disagree with me with what I'm about to say. Maybe you won't. I'm not really sure your stance. I think I know, but I don't know for a fact. The tide started to turn with Alex right around a couple years after the Sandy Hook stuff and people that started becoming like a Pizzagate, like lightning topic you were shunned from even bringing up or at all. Around that time, he starts pushing the Trump stuff.
Yep.
And Trump,
that was Trump. Is
what I think Alex is. He's playing the part. There's whether he knows it, whether it's on the surface or not. Like, I won't go full MK Ultra stuff, but I'll leave that possibility there. With Trump, Trump was given the things to say to get people like us. I was never a Trump guy because I always thought he was. I kind of, even Donald Jeffries, I'll give the two of us credit there. We kind of saw, you know, Don gave a name for it, the Trumpenstein Project.
Right, Project, yeah.
I didn't have that term, but I agreed with it even before. Around that time, I started becoming familiar with Donald Jeffries through his interviews and things like that. But what I had been woken up, not woke, but I had been awake.
They stole
by people like the late Dave McGowan and the late Bill Cooper. And I know they're both dead, but that gives them a lot of credibility that these other guys that are still kicking and making money that they don't necessarily have. So when the Trump thing, he went from being a guy who was saying how the left-right paradigm, right, is the left and the right are the same thing, you know, all that, which I agree with you. I think that it was all a show. Everything's a show. I think when he started going towards this Trump thing, he was playing the part because Trump was the late, kind of like Elon Musk is the technology version of both of them. Yet another puppet, like kind of like Biden, all these presidential people, they're puppets. They're just a figurehead. That's all.
Yeah, no, you're right, dude. You're right. No, I said, I'm sitting there. Okay. And I fell for Trump in the beginning because I read Trump's, he put out something online, his very first, you know, whatever statement it is.
Well, Cambridge Analytica.
Billy Ray exposed that. That's right. Billy Ray Valentine, the East Coast host with the most. He's the one that dug that up, right?
Yeah, he brought that up too, right? And Steve Bannon, all that stuff. That was a psychological
warfare. Yeah, it was right out of the John Birch Society. I'm like, wow, okay.
And they had the talking points, the conspiracy theory talking points.
Yeah, globalism, the UN, wow, yeah, these guys are
fake news. Fake news got popular because Trump started saying it. But guess what? He wasn't wrong, but he was told to say those things.
But then
he just tweeted for 4 years, and I don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
then he became another president, and then Syria happened, and I was like, immediately I knew.
Right.
I'm like, and then another
what was the moment? Well, just for people that are not familiar with Syria right now.
Well, Syria was
that, so many things have happened.
We must bomb Assad. It was the fake chemical weapons attack where the White Hats actually did it, and they said they used, I think it was sarin gas, and there was no reports of anything like that happening at all. And they, you know, I think Trump sent a couple missiles over there.
Right.
You know, and it's like, okay, if you're not part of this whole conglomerate, you wouldn't have went along with this whole fake story.
And he started collecting people from like the big banks and stuff and putting the around surrounding
well, that well, and a little bit before that, what struck my suspicion, not only of Trump, but of AJ, was these two things. AJ taught me, and I have to say that he's the one that he didn't teach me. He put me on the trail of the International Monetary Fund,
which I think he was supposed to.
The Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Goldman Sachs banker connection to cabinet being cabinet members.
Yeah,
you know, and big pharma too.
Pharma. So banks,
when he didn't go over Trump's cabinet members, and you had the Rex Tillerson, who I knew was an environmentalist, you know, just from knowing who that guy was. Right, big oil guy, and he put all these, you know, schmucks in here.
And they were all against Trump before that.
They were all IMF, CFR, Goldman Sachs, military-industrial complex, you know, military people. I'm like, no, nothing against the military, but that was kind of like not too many military people in the cabinet nowadays, right?
So right, and let's also remember when the birther thing? Remember people were like, Trump's racist. He brought up the birther thing. No, Hillary Clinton started the birther thing in 2008.
Yes.
I'm just saying, I'll give Trump that.
Nobody remembers that, dude. That's buried in the fish.
The Russian collusion. Russian
goldfish mind of the American public. That's
they're all the same. They're all the same. The gold. Remember the Russian collusion thing, right? It was originally supposed to be, oh, is Hillary in with the Russia? It was the same thing, and they got flipped.
They flipped the script.
Yeah,
that's all they did.
So you know,
those two things, dude. I mean, when I seen those things, I'm like, oh, this is all shenanigans. And now Alex is involved in it, and I can't trust him anymore. And then David Knight quit. Then David Knight got fired. And I couldn't listen to Alex anyways. All I was listening to was the David Knight show for like the last year or whatever it was.
And I give David Knight I have a lot of respect for the fact that, you know, he may have been let go by Alex, but he put himself in that position to say, I'm not going to push the Trump thing. You know, Trump's not right here. Over a few other things too, like, and he's like, I'm not going to do that. So he stuck to his guns, and
integrity, now
I think he's better off where he is now with his own thing. But yeah, I give him a lot of integrity, and what did you make of the Q thing too? Because I
that right away. I mean, I know you knew. I mean, I'm like, oh, this is psyop shit. I got people calling me up.
JFK Jr. They're saying like he was Q. I'm like, I'm fairly certain I talked to the last guy that talked to John F. Kennedy from the air traffic control tower. I'm pretty sure John F. Kennedy Jr. is dead. Like, he's been dead since 99. He's not coming back. He's not being the VP to Trump or whatever, you know.
Another thing that alerted me to Q was how much of the general public on the right who were Trump supporters were lapping it up. I knew it was a psyop, dude. I'm like, I got friends who, you know, they're Trump.
I felt bad.
All of a sudden. Yeah,
I felt bad because there's a lot of hope there that they would have these secret tribunals to get these people finally. Yeah, I get that because there's no hope anymore. But I've been researching this stuff for so long. I'm kind of glad that I, you know, because if I hadn't been privy to this stuff, I probably would have been sucked in with the same thing. So I don't fault people for.
And now they've divided the country hugely. They've identified anybody who thinks in a more of a right wing or libertarian kind of a mindset as a terrorist or dangerous person now. So any kind of rebellion that would come from that vestige of the Republic is gone, dude. It's going to be labeled as terrorist. You know,
January 6th. January 6th, which I think is also engineered.
Absolutely. And those guys led the lambs to the slaughter.
Yeah, you know? And people don't, I already forgot that. He said, I'm going with you. What did he do? He hightailed it back to the White House, and on video is sitting there drinking champagne and cheering. He's wearing boxing gloves at a certain point. People are getting killed.
Yeah.
During this.
Yeah.
So when people are, oh yeah, you don't like Trump. I think he's a puppet, but yeah, he's despicable. Like,
it's hard to living out of that paradigm, right? That paradigm is a false dichotomy. It goes back to what we started talking about in the beginning of the episode here, that it's fake. And once you get away from the fake, you know, I my thing is, dude, like, you know, I want our listeners, and I want people to be able to tell other individuals stuff that's important and say it in a way that's intelligent and easy to digest.
Right.
You know, a lot of people can't read white papers and go through them and then digest them to somebody else. Some people can, some people can't. A lot of people can't do the research you do and then be able to like break it
down.
They have families.
They have to work 15 hours a day. That's the last thing they want to do is delve into this.
And I want us to craft after like what David does, a intelligent, calm way to talk to people and get them to understand what's going on. And I want the people who listen to David Knight and everyone else and all the other, you know, America Unplugged, you, all Don Jeffries, everybody to, and Number Six, you know, all the listeners to be able to tell other people in a way that's going to matter. Not the Alex Jones way, you can't shake them awake, guys. Right. We have to nudge them. These are human beings, man. You get mad at them, but you can't.
A lot of them don't have hope, and that's why I have empathy. You know, I don't scorn.
Yeah, they're not enlightened like we are, man.
But I know that. Well, I'm trying. Even myself, like, believe me, I'm far from being enlightened, but I'm learning every day, and I'm making the effort and everything. But as we're winding down here, because I know that, you know, I know we got to wind down, but. You came to meet Jason Barker through the chat room of America Unplugged and I Protest and things like that. How long ago was this?
Really crazy thing. So, you know, we were all listening to David Knight, and I'd heard about Jason Barker. He'd write in some stuff. David would read it, his exemption letter. I think it was the first I heard of it. I thought he was a younger guy, by the way. And then, you know, to be honest with you, I really didn't get involved in the chats very often, you know, on Rockfin or anything like that. I think the first time I really kind of got involved in the chat was on Global Warning when David started doing that show.
Right.
And I said, you know, I'm going to ask questions in the chat. That's a good way to communicate with David.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when I got noticed in the chat a little bit. And I'm kind of, you know, backing off, you know, people don't know me. I don't know them. This is just a chat, you know, whatever, you know. And then I started talking to these people, and I was like, wow, they're pretty cool people here, right?
Well, like-minded,
a lot of like-minded people. So I think it was a night we were watching Global Warning or something, and Jay's like, hey, does anybody want to help me try something out? And I'm like, yeah, why not?
I'll help you try something out.
And it was the StreamYard.
And how long ago was this?
Beginning in November.
Exactly. And it feels like you guys have been on for years.
Yeah.
And I wasn't like, I've known you guys for years, kind of like with Six and Don.
Yeah.
And I really haven't. Well, Don for a few years now, but everyone else, I feel like, you know, it hasn't been that long, but it feels like all of you guys have been in my life this whole time.
And it wasn't supposed to be this either. It was just supposed to be a place for the people in the chat to come and meet, you know, and we'll just chat a little bit, you know, and do it like that. It
was almost like a David Knight after show. Like they did the Talking Dead after Walking Dead.
There you go. Exactly. You know, and we didn't know it was going to morph into this, you know, we had no idea. Now, you know, and I just like to say this.
Yeah, yeah.
When David Knight mentions our show, or Billy Ray Valentine mentions our show, or any of those guys, dude, that blows our face off. You know, I mean, I'm in awe. I am an amateur. I am not a podcaster, never done this before.
You don't carry yourself that way. I'm not just blowing smoke, seriously. Well,
you know, and I'm just like, I am not trying to fill their shoes or compete with them. I'm trying to elevate them. I'm trying to get people to listen to them.
Me too.
Right? Because they're a lot more succinct than I am, you know.
That's how I was with John. Yeah. Yep.
And I think it kind of works out in the way where, like, I feel like we're their Boy Scouts. I don't mean this in a weird way, but like we're their Boy Scouts. We're the juniors, right? Yeah, we're the junior rank behind them, you know. So, and I like that spot. I think it's a good spot. And I want to give kudos to those guys and just they inspire us, you know. So, and it's just, I want people just to be able to explain, and I want people in our community not to feel alone. That's why we like to get people on. Yeah. You know, I want the people in the chat to come on. I want the people who watch America Unplugged and all that to come on. And so it's
actually most people are alone. Most people are alone in the world that we're.
Yeah. I want to give them a voice and I want them to get them in this community, and we're not alone. We're going to need each other. We're going to have to build some kind of counter community. I do believe that. So that was the whole thing behind, I mean, that's what it turned into.
Yeah, no, and it keeps evolving. It kind of like I said, our friend Six, like the new prisoners, that was just two people originally, and it's evolving. But what is, as we come to a close here, do you have any wish list? I'm assuming David Knight would probably be at the top of it, but do you have a wish list of guests you'd like
to have? Well, yeah, and you know what? This is good because I want to say this too, because there's Tony Arterburn, right? And we're not trying to ignore Tony. We don't want to bug Tony because we know
he's very busy. So, yeah.
But you know, we got Kenzie. She said she'd come on, and we're going to start scheduling these people. David Knight said he would come on. You know, but we're not going to bug David Knight. Yeah, we're scared. Yeah, he said it on air. That's the only reason I said it, because he actually said it on air. A global warning, I think. Yeah. So, I mean, and we're not holding any of these people to this. I want to get Billy Ray on. We had Don Jeffries on and Vince and all these people. So eventually we're going to get to them. But we want, you know, like with David, and no offense to the other people at all either, you know, we want to make sure that we're well polished, because we really what we do with all those people, we kind of like we rep them, right? We're affiliated, right? We're affiliated, you know, as, you know, street talk or whatever.
There's a certain image of David Knight, image and perception of David Knight.
We affiliate ourselves with them. Yeah. So when we broadcast, when we do stuff, we want to make sure it's with the same decorum that all of them have. You know, even America Unplugged, you know, they have decorum too. They have a standard. There's a standard for everyone. And we want to make sure we live up to that standard, and that we're ready for a guy like David Knight to come on. You know, I mean, and that's no offense to anybody that we've had on or are going to have on before him, but he was the guy that kind of, this was Knights of the Storm.
That's it. Yeah. So even the title, it's like,
it was his seed. Yeah. His seed started this, you know, and I'm proud of it. I'm super proud of it.
So, yeah. So I totally get that. And all right. So we went through that, and the ultimate goal for you in just in general with the show and.
The ultimate goal is to reach those people, man. Get that person so they don't feel alone. Get the spirit. I want everybody to feel this spirit, whatever you believe in. I'll call it the Holy Spirit, but there's a spirit moving us around and moving us to do these things. I feel it when I'm doing this. I know you can feel it when you're doing it.
I feel like when everyone is starting to meet now, I will say there's something to that. Like,
yeah, there's providence going on, and I want people not to feel alone, and I want them to be able to let the rest of the people know in this world who are close to them or their friends. And I want them to be able to do it in an articulated way or a basic way. So, you know, that's my main thing.
That's great. That's fantastic. Do you guys have a website, a way for people to contact you?
We do. Okay. So we've got the Knights of the Storm. Oh man, Jay's going to kill me, cause I don't remember all this stuff. He's the super producer, but we have a website. If you go to our Twitter at Knights of the OTS, there's a link right to the website. We got all kinds of great stuff there. Our show times, all the people that we mentioned, Showtimes, Gardner.
Yeah, you're providing a service that I haven't seen anywhere else. So what exactly is that? It's like a TV guide for podcasts.
Yeah, right? TV guide for podcasts, the people that we believe are pertinent and, you know, have good information. And you're on there. You know, number six is on there. We're going to get Gerald Celente on there, another guy named Gregory Manorino. I think we got Charlie Robinson on there. We got, you know, Don Jeffries stuff on there. You know, America Unplugged, all those guys, you know.
That's great. I think it's there's one that will I think it's the knightsofthestorm.com. If not, it's knightsofthestorm.com, but I know there's definitely KOTS.com that will get routed or whatever the word is so that they can find you.
Jay's pretty good at that stuff. And then I've got probably before the end of the week, I'm going to be my first Substack's coming out.
Really?
Yep. So there's going to be some writing on there, you know, from time
What's
to time.
What's the official address for that, too?
I think it's going to be Angry's newsletter. I think, you know, it's, I've almost got it all culminated. Yeah. So, you know, you'll be one of the guys I'll be sending one of my test things to because he could do that. Really, but awesome. So, yeah, I'm going to have that. And then I'm going to do some writing on there. And then I'm going to be doing a lot of, like, shorter videos and stuff.
Okay.
I might call it the Tiger's Den or something like that, you know. But, yeah, that's right. You know, I got a foreign correspondent for the Middle East that I can talk to. Yeah, he's got connections in the Middle East, so he can tell me when stuff happens, pops up there. I can do man on the street in Detroit. You know, there's a lot of different stuff I'd like to do. You know, little reports that I like to do, and then you know, Knights of the Storm also will be able to utilize my report. So you know, and I'm trying to get everybody to do that. Everybody, you know, if you're in this, start a Substack if you have time. You know,
yeah,
we got to promote yourself a little bit. Right. Yes. Cause then you're promoting when I promote me and then I promote you and then I promote Knights of the OTS you know, then we're promoting David Knight and Billy Ray Valentine. And so it's a promotional tree.
I've been doing it.
Everybody do the Twitter thing, man.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Okay. This will be the last thing, I promise.
Gotcha, brother.
Can you describe for, you know, people that might not grasp I know exactly because, like I said, we had a phone conversation a little while ago. I've been doing this to promote like all my friends' work and you know, all that stuff. But you actually brought something else to my attention that I thought was great. You have a way of beating the algorithms with the censorship. Can you just explain in layman's terms exactly what they have to do to be able to do that?
So there's three steps. The first step is. You find your person that, let's say it's the Chris Graves show. Say it's Digging Chris Graves and you want to retweet his show. You quote the tweet.
You go
down to quote tweet. Okay. And then after that you put @ and you put Chris Graves. Okay. And you'll start typing Chris. And if you follow him, his name's going to pop up and you press it, you know,
whatever letters you're at, it'll start to list everyone that has.
Exactly. So do that with all the people that you want to Twitter to notice, that you want people to hear from, right?
Especially people that might actually be shadow banned right now.
And exactly. This is the way
our friend Rhonda had that the other day. She didn't get any of our updates for a whole week. She was telling me.
Yeah.
They're getting worse with it.
Yeah, they're getting worse. But if we keep at this, that because I know it. So anyway, so and you fill that up, like Chris told me this, fill that up with everybody. And here's another thing though. You want to put your friends in there, but if your friends got 2 followers, that don't help.
It's kind of taking up space.
It's not the purpose of this, isn't to be nice. It's as many eyes on it. Yeah, trick the algorithm. I put certain people in because I know they will retweet it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
But everyone that they have as friends.
Yeah, put in all your main people. So, like with me, it's Chris Graves, Tony Artimer, Billy Ray Valentine, Liberty Terry, which is David Knight, you know, Knights of the OTC, #6. I always put like people I'm for sure, you know, and I'll switch it around sometimes because I might run out of room. Gardner Goldsmith, but then Tucker Carlson, he's got 250K follower, 1 million followers. Oprah, you know.
I've done that as a joke, but you know, it's not a joke because she's.
No.
You like way out there, yeah.
I mean, Elon Musk right now is one of the guys that you want to tag. The Ron Paul Institute,
Bezos. I put Biden, Bezos, I put Kamala Harris. Monica Lewinsky the other day.
I would say save at least 4 or 5 spots for people you might not even like or people that are even on the right, right? Yeah. If Trump had a Twitter account, I'd hashtag Trump,
yeah,
all the people that follow him, right? Or you know,
so I had George Bush and then I had Chelsea Clinton.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, that's beautiful. Yeah,
all the
whoever the Democrat candidate is, you're definitely going to want to hashtag that person.
Yeah,
same with the Republican candidate because those are all new people following them on Twitter. You know that you get one person, but anyway, so you do that.
Yeah,
so quote tweet and then put in as many people as you can. Save 5 rooms for 5 big names with huge followers. Exactly. Right. So that tricks the algorithm because now you're being seen in other people's feed. You're tagging other people. What, you know, Tucker Carlson, you know, is in your stupid Twitter thing, but it garnishes views. So, and I'll tell you how I know this in a minute. So then the next thing, so you quote your people, you tag your people, tag. Okay. Then the next thing is really easy. You have to retweet the stuff.
Right. Yeah.
You gotta retweet it. You have to. But, you know, if you don't do that, you're not in the game at all.
But and we're not saying in like a harassment type of way where no. If there's someone that doesn't want to be tagged and they let you know that, then respect that, you know?
Well, I haven't had that happen yet. Have you?
I haven't really either, but I've had my suspicions. Like, you know, if like maybe every time don't quote tweet the same people every single time, maybe mix it up just so they're not getting fed up with you at a certain point. You
know? Exactly. So, and then another thing is, okay, so you take the Chris Graves show, you know, Digging with Chris Graves, and you go and you drop it in Tucker Carlson's feed.
Yes.
You take the Don Jeffries I Protest show, you drop it in Tucker Carlson's feed. If you do that, people will see it.
Yeah.
And these are giant feeds. They're not, the admin's not going to be like, oh, look, this guy's, what are they going to
do? Don't do that for someone that has 50 followers, because they're going to see it every time. They're going to get.
Yeah, no, it's got to be huge. It's got to be over 250K.
You know, at least it'll be in there. Yeah.
You know, it'll mix like
with
that.
Your algorithms too while you're doing that, like Tucker's feed and all that.
That's the thing, Chris, is it mixes it all together. And, you know, now, and that algorithm, that AI has problems deciphering all of this.
And it pulls people like Rhonda back in from shadow banned all of a sudden for the week. You know what
and
I mean?
I've been looking at the analytics now because that little thing came up. We are getting seen way more. The posts that I do that with get seen way more than the post that I do not do that with. And I know, I say this ad nauseum, nobody wants to play this game with Twitter. I know it sucks. I don't go on Facebook out of principle, okay? But still, I mean,
the only way we can communicate at the moment.
Yeah. I'm in a fiat monetary system I totally don't believe in, dude, and I have to participate in it.
Yeah.
You know, Twitter's all we got right now. It's our best chance. We got to participate in it. If we don't try, we can't bitch. Oh, they're shadow banning. Oh, they're doing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay. Hey, man, someone punched you in the
mouth. Do something about it.
This is a possible thing. Don't put your hand in your pants and scream like a tough guy. Actually, do something.
Yeah. And that's what we're trying to do. I mean, if it does, ultimately, if it doesn't work, we tried something, you know? If they're not going to let us protest or ask questions now without these penalties and trillions of dollars, this is all we're really left with.
Exactly, guys. I mean, I can't do anything on Facebook. I can't do anything on YouTube. Yeah. They're letting our video stay on Twitter. Okay, yeah, it's shadow banned, but okay, let's trick them, man.
Yeah.
Let's crawl into the bob wire, dude. Let's sneak in.
The other episode, the Operation Northwoods. Actually, the one I did with Don and Don's son, John, for the year-end review.
That was great, by the way.
Oh, thank you. It was all them. Believe me, like, I appreciate all you guys. Jason let me know that he did some testing and experiments, and he noticed that it said that there was only one person watching, when I know for a fact, based on my cell phone, that there were other people telling me they're watching live, and the only one was one.
And here's the thing that's weird about this, guys, though. Here's a weird caveat. The whole time I was watching, it was 4 or 5. And Jason was texting me. So that's weird.
Yeah.
You know?
It's so weird, yeah. I had 10 people. I knew because it was right behind the camera or whatever. So I would look every now and then. But Jason said it said him. One, and that was it.
Wow.
We know for a fact it was not just one.
Right.
So I don't know what that means because like, the algorithms are getting screwed with, or I don't know if it's successful or whatever. But in the end, it said I had more viewers after the fact. But during the live thing, everyone had a different number, apparently, because I didn't know that you had 4 or 5.
It's weird. And that's the thing. You know what, guys? The algorithm, let's attack it, man. Let's use it against them. Tag, tweet, drop. That's all we got to do. Get your listeners to do it. You know, when I talk to number 6, if I ever get the chance, I'll be like, dude, tell your listeners to do this, man.
Well, that's the next thing that we're working on as we come to an end right now. That is what I know that Jason had mentioned that you guys had wanted to have Lisa come on and talk about her background with the legal stuff and her plight with her father and how she's got a story to tell and not a lot of support. So, if she can have her story told more, because I had her on my podcast, Dawn's had her on a few times. She's with the new prisoners, like I am every week. With people like Gary McBride, we're trying to get his work out there. I'm working on it. But the big thing is we want to have like a, you know, kind of like what, I don't know if you're familiar with Union of the Unwanted.
It's a show that
Sam Tripoli does on Rockfin.
Okay.
He does, and Charlie Robinson. It's like they do it together with another guy named Randy. What they do is they invite kind of like what we're doing right here, right? In general, what we were talking about. They'll have, and Chuck has been on Union of the Chuck Rochelli. It'll be like a whole bunch of people from different podcasts, all invited on a swap cast or whatever they call it. They have different words for it, but they'll do this Union of the Unwanted show with like 10 people or 20 people, depending on what the topic is. And usually Charlie Robinson is in there all the time. Sam Tripoli of Tinfoil Hat, you know, and Joe Rogan fame, you know, he's friends with him. They'll have a whole bunch of different people from our corner of the world here, like the conspiracy types of corruption, things like that. And they'll all have their own opinion. The Donald Jeffries and Tony and Billy, they've all been on Union of the Unwanted. It's kind of that model, what we're talking about with all of our things. So what I'm trying to do is get the new prisoners and you guys and have like an epic conversation. And we can get maybe like people like Guard and Don and, you know, other, any, you know, all, it's a support thing. Yeah. And I'm not even saying me being in the room or what I'm saying. I'm trying to get all my digital researcher friends in the same space for like from time to time. Is all I'm saying.
Well, I'm so, down, dude. Yeah. We already told the prisoner we're down anytime you guys want to. Okay. Do that. I love, you know, his show is great, man. His monologues are epic, dude.
Yeah, and you both have like awesome. I'm not just fluffing your whatever right now, but I'm saying you both have a distinct, awesome like hosting thing that I don't have. You know, so I'm envious. Like you got a voice for this type of thing, and that's
don't
great.
Sell yourself short, Chris.
Well, yes,
but thank you. No, yeah, anyway. They're sweet down there. Yeah, that show is kick ass for sure.
And so do yours. And the most important thing right now is when is your show on for the folks?
10 a.m. Saturdays.
Okay. On Twitter time. And
on Twitter. We're on Twitter. I think we go Rumble. To DLive. Rumble,
Odyssey,
yep,
and YouTube sometimes, right?
Depending on the subject. We did one on economics, so we were able to post that one on YouTube. And then I just started us a BitChute channel too, so we're on BitChute now, guys.
Oh, next, that's
yeah. Now, not everything is up there because I got to figure out how to split the episodes because some of them are too long. But I got at least one up there, so we just got it started today. But I'll be working on that through the week.
All right, yeah, everyone, please support this man's efforts and his work, and Jason Barker and Rhonda, everybody. It's been a pleasure, and I know I had you for much longer than we had talked about, but I'm
great.
I'm glad that we were able to kind of go down this rabbit hole of truth. Put that on Don Jeffries' chair. It'll be in my next T-shirt. You have a great night, and I can't wait to do this again. And we'll talk to you soon, everybody. And,
it was an honor, Chris. Honor. Thank you very much, man.
The honor was all mine, and we got these awesome outro that I didn't create, but I'm appreciative of the person that did. Have a good night, everybody.
How dare you!